Only you can make all this world seem right.
So it all comes down to one guy. The billions lost in the 2009 recession and financial meltdown. All of those underwater homeowners, people who lost their homes and jobs since 2009. And we're not even out of it as the unemployment rate creeps down to 6.3%. One bank executive, only one, is serving time for the cooked numbers that lay behind the financial crisis of 2009. It's a mystery senior reporter Jesse Eisinger of ProPublica decided to get to the bottom of, literally, why only one top banker went to jail for the financial crisis is the title of his piece in this week's New York Times Magazine. Jesse, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell me about this defendant in Pennsylvania who on some level is the symbol of everything that went wrong in the economy and everything that went wrong in the investigations to try to hold people accountable after the financial meltdown.
Yes, they got the guy who caused the crisis.
Yes.
His name is Karim Sarageldin. He is an Egyptian-born investment banker, was an investment banker for Credit Suisse. He was four rungs below the CEO, and he was in charge of traders who traded complex mortgage securities.
And he is guilty.
He's guilty.
Yeah.
There's no question.
What did he do?
I don't want to minimize his guilt, and he doesn't minimize his guilt. He oversaw a team that lied about the values of their assets. And at one crucial moment, they sought a fake deal with another bank to preserve the value of their mortgage-backed securities as if they were willing to purchase at a higher price. Now, the question is, did anybody else do this?
Well, you described that the judge in the sentencing of Mr. Sarageldin actually has some soul-searching moments on that precise issue. Who else did worse? That sort of thing.
Yes. It was an amazing moment to see Hellerstein, judge's district judge down in Manhattan, struggle with this. And he said there was an evil climate, not just at your bank, but at all the other banks. And it was clear to him. And yet he was presented with this one defendant and had to do what he needs to do, sentence Karim. And that's proper. But he was baffled by this state of affairs.
And you're baffled why Karim is the one banker sitting in jail from the mortgage-backed securities sell-off meltdown crisis of 2009.
I think that none of us could possibly fathom this. This is not justice. Either Karim is not guilty or somebody else somewhere, especially somewhere higher up in the firmament of corporate America, had to have been guilty. And so I set out to try to figure out how this could possibly have happened, that they didn't get anyone else.
And if you're an archaeologist, you look at the sort of legal record of financial debacles going back to the 1980s, and you see prosecutions in the savings and loan case. You see prosecutions of Arthur Andersen. The company actually went out of business. You see prosecutions and guilty verdicts for Enron. And then all of a sudden, boom, you drop off the edge and there's nothing.
Right. The greatest calamity since the Great Depression, and we've got nothing.
Who changed? Did the Justice Department change strategy? Did the lawyers graduate from a different school all of a sudden?
Yeah. So my argument is that over the decade after the successful prosecutions of Enron, WorldCom, et cetera, the Department of Justice suffered a series of fiascos, self-imposed changes in their rules. They shot themselves in the foot. They overreached. They had bad rulings from the courts. And this all added up to two things. One, an erosion of their skill set and an inability to investigate. And then also a change in culture where they just started running scared.
Let's talk about the expertise. Basically, you say that the Justice Department lawyers are really good at compelling settlements but not terribly good at mounting prosecutions that are going to end up in court.
Yes. After Arthur Andersen. Arthur Andersen is the big accounting firm that enables Enron. The DOJ indicts them. Arthur Andersen goes out of business, and then eventually the Supreme Court throws out the ruling, and the Department of Justice considers this a terrible black eye.
Don't go down there again.
And they don't want to do that. I think they overlearn the lesson there. And then what happens is they start to shift to settlements. deferred prosecutions, non-prosecutions, and settlements. And the settlement culture completely erodes their investigative ability. If you're going into it with a sense that you're going to settle with the corporation, the main thing that you don't do is investigate thoroughly the individuals, especially the individuals at the highest echelons of corporate America, to try to figure out whether they committed a crime.
The irony here is that in the beginning, during the Bush era, the notion was we're not going to give companies the impression that this is a kind of license for doing bad things, paying these settlements. But that's exactly where we are today.
Yes. I mean, I think that a lot of the irony here is that their own ambitions in the Department of Justice have been turned on them and undone their abilities to actually successfully prosecute people and corporations. And so what happened was they wanted to, the early Bush administration Department of Justice, ironically,
they were tough.
They were very tough. They prosecuted one of George Bush's closest political allies in Ken Lay at Enron.
And now the Justice Department fears that by going after companies, they're actually reducing people's jobs, which is politically sensitive. And by aggressively prosecuting, they get tarred with the idea that you're denying people access to lawyers, that suddenly the Department of Justice in seeking justice is anti-democratic. That's where we are today.
Yes. So what happened was in the another fiasco after Arthur Andersen was the KPMG investigation into tax fraud in the Southern District, and they overreached and supposedly violated the constitutional rights of the individuals by depriving them of the attorneys paid for by KPMG. Some prosecutors consider this hush money from the corporation, but the judge said, no, you can't make the company stop paying those fees. And that's one significant ruling that really has rolled back a series of tools that prosecutors used to use to pierce the corporate veil to get corporations to prosecute corporations and, more importantly, I think, prosecute the individuals at corporations who are committing crimes.
Jesse Eisinger is senior reporter for ProPublica and author of Why Only One Top Banker Went to Jail for the Financial Crisis in this week's New York Times Magazine. Jesse, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we'll explore the meaning of the death penalty. One of you in Oregon says, there are many that should be put down because of my own vengeance, but it costs so much to keep them alive. I'm on the fence. Justice or vengeance? What do you think about the death penalty? 8778-MY-TAKE. That's our number. You can go to takeaway.org to join the conversation.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.